then it wipes outline, it gets into a little more detail. You read that a couple of times, you kind of get the idea. It's a very, very good, concise outline of some of the things you need to know, and that will help you become more intelligent. But let's talk about the most important thing. We get an enviable task, like I, at Calvin's College, about talking about the least popular subject. We get to talk about death, and we're not going to be more than that. But that's what we're talking about here. And the most important thing is goes back to the old saying, there is nothing more sure than death and taxes. That's why we're here. We don't want to give that government that we love so dearly any more than they are entitled to. And we want to save as much as we can for our families. So every estate planning problem starts with, am I going to be subject, is my estate or my heirs going to be subject to the estate tax? If you're lucky enough, no, if your heirs are lucky enough for you to die in 2010, there won't be any estate tax. Next year, if your estate is worth less than $3.5 million, there won't be any estate tax in 2009. This year, it's $2 million. That's the federal exclusion or unified credit. And Weiss outline goes into a lot of detail explaining what those terms mean. And in 2011, and this is why estate planning is so unsure and problematic, the estate tax will be 55% raised. It's currently 45%. So it's going to kick up 10 points in the rate. And the exclusion will be $1 million. We're going to go back to what it was in 2001 when the tax reform package was passed. Complicated? Absolutely. This whole area, and we can talk right in our lab earlier, one sentence out of either one of our, either his outline or my checklist, and we can do a seminar all morning on that one thing. Now, what's going to happen in politics? I talked to Jay Kerr last week in preparation for this seminar, and a good friend of mine is the tax counsel for the minority, the ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee, and I asked them both. United States Senate Finance Committee, what are the chances of some reform in this area this year? And Jane and I also talked about the presidential election, but the staff member of the Finance Committee and I talked a little bit about what's going on in Congress right now. The stimulus package is the tax issue in Congress right now. That's what the Finance Committee is dealing with in the Senate. That's what the Ways and Means Committee is dealing with in the House, and that's consuming everybody's thoughts about taxes. So Weiss is correct, I think, in saying that this year we're going to be the likelihood of us seeing any discussion, let alone any vote on state tax repeal reform, is very slim. And by the time we roll into May, these guys in the Congress are thinking about re-election as far as the House of Representatives is concerned, but certainly everybody's going to be thinking about the presidential election and the summer recess. I just don't see it happening. So assume that what we have now as far as the state tax is what we're going to see on into the near future. As far as the presidential candidates go, Senator Obama would probably like to go back to square one today. So let's go back to 2001 and what the estate tax looked like then now. Senator Clinton never voted for the compromise. There was a compromise vote in the Senate 2 years ago, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. She didn't vote for that compromise. So we can assume that she's not a real advocate, at least, and probably move more on the subject, and doesn't know a whole lot about what we do out on the farms and ranches. Senator McCain never voted for the Bush tax package, including the estate tax reform, and now is advocating a support of the continuation of the Bush tax cuts. And then Governor Romney has stated that he would repeal the estate tax. So we're all on board as far as these presidential candidates go. And I don't know what Governor Huckabee's position is on this, but I assume he's a pretty conservative guy and an ag oriented state, probably somewhere at least in the middle of that. So when you walk into that attorney's office, you need to be very concerned about that initial question. How much is my estate worth? And do I qualify for an exemption? Am I going to be subject? Is my estate, my heirs going to be subject to a tax on that estate? I can't answer that question for you. And by the way, questions, if you have any, don't hesitate to just stick your arm in the air. Don't throw us off. Why do I get called out by judges all the time? And so we're used to that sort of thing. Yeah, okay, see, it works.
I was hoping you'd get around to the candidates that are going to win. I was worried you were going to stop after the first two. Thank you. It seems to me that it's a guessing game on when we're going to die for most of us and what's going to be when it happens. It seems to me you just have to get a plan to get as much as you can properly and go control it into your heirs. And because we don't know when the rain is, you don't know when you're going to die. I mean, these are all, thank God, for most of us unknown. So what's the plan? You got to get it out of your name into somebody else who still maintains control of it, so you still have fun. And I think no matter what the rate is or what the time is, we don't know. And it will always be that way, I hope, as far as the time of death.
I hope everybody heard that. The gentleman makes a great point. We really don't know. This is certainly one of the most unknowns of our lives. When we're going to pass on, and as far as the estate tax goes, what's the rate? What's the exemption? You don't know. So plan for, as he said, keeping as much control of your ranch as you want or need, and pass as much of it on as you can while you're still alive and still maintaining that control. And that's a good goal. Walking into an attorney's office with that in mind is probably a good idea. The first thing you should do, I'm not going to put anybody on the spot here by asking you whether you've got it, but let's put the question this way. If you have a will, please raise your hand and tell me whether that will has been executed by you in the last. Is it older than 5 years? If anybody's got a will that's younger than 5 years, don't raise your hand. If you do have one that's older than 5 years, raise your hand. And I'm going to include myself in it. Okay. And a lot of people do so. We should probably go to our lawyers and at least talk about it, whether they've got a will. Before you do anything in the estate planning area, have a will. And I mean before you even inventory your assets. It's that important because you get to control the distribution of your estate, the allocation of your assets, the guardian of your children, the naming of your executor and successor and executor is the person who's going to administer your estate when you're gone. You get to name all of those things yourself. And if you don't have a will, the state gets to do it. So it's highly important that you start out with a will. And then I'll go through this checklist that's in the materials. I'm not going to get into every one of these. I don't have time to do that. And I want to, and both of us want to have some time for questions and discussion. But a will is the absolute starting point for the most people. Then the next thing is to inventory your assets. Now this is an interesting little problem. The first one I've got on your list is deeds and leases. Everybody in this room, I assume, knows all the property that you own, all of the property that you own, that you control through the leases. I bet you're wrong. And I'll give you an anecdote to illustrate that. Did an estate plan for an old gentleman here in Nevada about 25 years ago. And he'd been a long time client of my father and grandfather's. He was a great old guy. He owned a significant amount of property in western Nevada and California. So we're doing this estate plan. And we are listing all the assets. Well, there were some 40s up in the mountains that were around springs, there's some old mining claims. A lot of most of those properties in California, by the way. I was the only one with my law firm at the time that was licensed to practice in California. All this fell on my shoulders. So we kind of looked at this property list, and about 10, maybe 12 parcels, if I can remember correctly, we couldn't find any. In the abstract, in the title, we couldn't find any chain of title that landed in his hands. 10 parcels of property. One was about 195 acres, if I recall. One was about a 5-acre parcel around a mining, old mine claim. And several of them were 40s or 80s on very important pieces of property that were that had water sources on them, springs. For stock water in one case. One of them was a significant irrigation water resource for a high mountain meadow where it grazed a lot of cattle in the summertime. So we ended up going to California courts in the counties where these properties were located and had to do quiet title actions. And that's just because it's a matter, it's a legal matter. You go into court, say, I own property, you publish it. Notice to the world, you have a hearing, the judge says you have to do, then the following one. But here was 12 pieces of property that were significant part of his operation that he thought he owned, and in fact did not. Once we got the quiet title action done, he owned the property as part of his estate. So that's something you should be aware of when you start this process. Another thing, something simple like equipment list. If you really went out and started looking on some of your operations at the amount of equipment you own, you'd be surprised, and you'd probably be surprised at its value. So that's another one. Another one rarely people think about is court orders. Orders from the court, as in the case of these quiet title actions I was talking about, can have an impact on the assets of the state. Well, it can be a probate order, it could be an heir to a prior estate, it could be a divorce order, which splits property or grants property. So think about those things, too, when you come in with the inventory of your estate. Out here west, grazing permits, water permits, best entitled to water rights, range improvements on our allotments. We own those. Those are all important things to list. And you'd be surprised. I just went through an inventory of some range improvements just this past year, and I was surprised at some of the range improvements that we had that were actually listed in the BLM, but we kind of haven't, you know, the BLM records that we hadn't thought about for years. But it's another thing to be very aware of, especially out here in the West. And then the last one I'll mention is a couple of them. Mortgages. Your state is composed of assets and also liabilities, obviously. So you have to do a balance sheet. And then the means, you might have some means against the property, or you might, if you're maybe a contractor, you might have a lien, mechanics lien, whatever. So think about those things. So you've got the inventory, you walk into the attorney's office, and then you have a discussion with the attorney. You probably will come up with some other ideas. I keep saying attorney. I hope you don't get the impression that because Dwight and I are attorneys that this is that we're somehow advertising for the poor downtrodden members of our profession. I think it's really important that the people who do this for a living, the experts, are the ones you consult. Now, we'll get to this in a minute, but of course there are other things that come into play. You might go buy an insurance policy. I'll talk about this in more detail. But you should go to your insurance agent for a state. Yes,
sir. I'm a little backed up on this. Are you, along your deeds and leases, are you talking that we should go through a title search on our property before we make the initial contact with the lawyer?
The question was, should you do a title search for before you go to the lawyer? If you have what you think is a pretty good list, if you've got it compiled and you know where the deeds are and in your own records, they're pretty retrievable, I'd say no. However, if there's any questions, I would say yes. And when you get to the valuation question, how much is my estate worth? How much do I really own? And if it's a close call as far as the estate tax goes, I'd say, yeah, your title search. I don't know what you think, right? But
was that answer again?
Sir?
The answer?
The answer was, I said you wouldn't need to do that initially necessarily, but there might be a place down the road where you would need to do a title search if a question came up. And for instance, if in the discussion, well, back to my example, if in the discussion with the lawyer, the older rancher says, yeah, I own the 80 acres up there around Fish Springs, and even the lawyer, if you're a good lawyer, should say, well, do you have a deed to that? Because I don't see Fish Springs located in the property description on the deed to the home ranch. And if the answer is no, then better abstract Fish Springs and figure out who actually might be on that deed. In one of these cases, if the last thing we found was a reference back in 1887 to an individual, and there was a gap in that chain of title from that point on. So it's just no possible. You'll find some things you didn't think you own, and all of a sudden got very surprised and found some things that you didn't know about. Powers of attorney. And here's, this is a pretty important thing. There's no order of importance here, by the way. These things just came to me as we were preparing for this class. But there's several kinds of powers of attorney. Most of you probably know about the limited power of attorney. You're going to go on that month-long vacation to Hawaii, and you'll leave the ranch in somebody's hands, and there might be a check or two that has to be written, payroll, or seed bill, or whatever. And so you give it the power of attorney to sign the check, if you're the only signatory on the bank account, to nephew Don, who's going to be running the ranch. Limited power of attorney is limited to tasks, and it's limited to time. It ends the day you get back from Hawaii. That's limited to negotiating instruments on that bank account, period. That's a limited power of attorney. General power of attorney is basically, I give Don on general power of attorney, and normally those forms that we had in our offices literally are everything. You can mortgage, hypothecate, which means sell, or otherwise in terms of property, you can sell all the cattle or buy all.